webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Thank you, Robert Moore, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, September 28th, 2011, the only 28th day of September, and the third webcast of the Start of Fall Pledge Drive 2-0-11 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this Wednesday Gospel Revolution webcast. We're glad to have you along wherever you are logging on to, live or on the archive. If you are listening live, and you will notice that we're a few minutes tardy, we have gotten a slip from the principal. This is not an excuse absence, an excuse late, but we are glad to have you with us. If you are logged on and it's about 7 minutes after 9 o'clock on the east coast of the USA, please know that you are cordially invited to join this here radio program by calling us toll-free in Canada and the United States at 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran waiting in the studio here in the Bay of the Holy Spirit, the home of the Tampa Bay Rays. And we're going to be talking a little bit about baseball tonight. You'll be excited to know. At 1-800-436-3260. And for those of you guys around the world that might be logged on live, 813-425-5773 is the number to call. 813-425-5773 is the direct line. Sean will pick up and get you online with the one and only, the legendary. We know him, we love him. It would be very difficult to live without him. Please welcome online the president and the founder, the grand poobah, the unteacher, the antichrist. Not the antichrist. What are you? You're the false Christ.
There you go.
Of the Gospel Revolution. From the home office in Houston, Texas, please welcome Mr. Michael Williams. Michael.
All titles are welcome. Hey, Glenn, how are you tonight?
Bro, I am good. I am exhausted. I went to the Tampa Bay Rays New York Yankees baseball game last night with my sons Joseph and Isaac, and it turned into a very late night. The Rays won. If they would have won tonight, see, I'm already giving up because the Rays are down right now to the Yankees 6-0. They would have guaranteed the greatest comeback in baseball history against the Boston Red Sox, who have completely collapsed. And as the beautiful humans out there might not be too surprised to find out, I get very involved in a baseball game. And so that's why I sound like I do tonight. And for a few other reasons, it's been a long day, but I'm ready to be energized and infused by the gospel. We have found in our lives over these last many years, I would say about 13, 14 years for me, Michael probably in the 20 to 25-year category since understanding the reality of the actual gospel, not Christianity, that it is enlightening, it is infusing, it is a saving to the soul.
Absolutely, and let me just say I am heartbroken over the baseball game.
Dude, you lie like a rug.
Did that sound indifferent?
No, it did not. It actually sounded pretty authentic, actually. Which is a little bit scary, to be quite frank.
That's
and honest
scary,
with you. To quote Jimmy.
When it comes to baseball, yes, this is true.
To quote Jimmy Swaggart, to be quite frank and honest. I love when Swaggart says that, to be quite frank and honest. I'm so glad
yes.
He prefaces his comments to let us know that he's being frank and honest.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we would hate for him to be anything less, at least occasionally anyway. You know, before the earlier this afternoon, this verse kept coming to my mind, and I just want to read it just to kind of kick off the webcast here this evening. Psalms 85:10. Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. So talk about the work of the cross being sealed with a kiss. We have scriptural evidence that the work of the cross is sealed with a kiss. Mercy and truth, of course, mercy being just exactly what it would be, kindness or the extent of mercy that we understand it. And truth actually having the connotation of stability, to be established, to be assured. Mercy and stability are met together. Interesting thing about the term together, it literally seems as though that these two came together almost by an act of violence. I found that quite interesting. To meet together has the connotation of meeting by an act of violence. Righteousness, which is just righteousness, right standing with God, and peace. And that meaning exactly what it means, just the peace of God, or peace with God, have kissed each other. Sealed with a kiss, that's what we're bringing to you tonight, is the work of the cross sealed with a kiss. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Mercy and truth have met at an almost violent meeting, and the result of that is righteousness and peace have kissed each other.
Well, I feel better already. You know, we have to rehearse the fact, folks, that the Psalms are part of the actual Scriptures. The New Testament is not part of the Scriptures. We have the Scriptures defined by Yeshua himself as the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets. Of course, the New Testament is not part of the Scriptures because, A, Yeshua never defined them as such, Michael, and B, there's no way they could be the actual Scriptures that he and the disciples were talking about because the Scriptures weren't written yet. And so, at least as far as their understanding was concerned, the New Testament writings that are wrought with contradictions and conflict between the disciples are not part of the Scriptures, as far as they were concerned. It was clearly a tradition and a doctrine of Christianity. But we're happy to report tonight that the Psalms are. And that just that one verse, Michael, and of course the Scriptures, the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets, are replete with references, foreshadowing, concepts that speak to the ultimate redemptive work of the cross and how we can relate to it.
Yes, absolutely. And a more important issue we've never addressed. We constantly emphasize the gospel. This meeting place that took place, this place where righteousness and peace literally have kissed one another. And this is all based in the Scriptures. It takes away virtually all of the confusion. I honestly feel zero confusion in my heart or mind about the subject of the gospel. It is so concise, it's so logical, reasonable, rational, powerful. In fact, it is the power of God, and it is the power of God. The gospel is the power of God for that part of us that needs to be reasonable and rational, needs to be vital, it needs to be alive, it needs to be creative, it needs to have that stability that is spoken of so much as that is the result of this great meeting of this powerful thing that happened at the cross. So, the scriptures are vitally important, and I can't get past that. I remember having so much confusion about the gospel, no matter what I believed over the years. And, I still have questions. Believe me, I still have questions. But there's not, and to this date, now the day that it happens, I'll let you know, but to this date, since we started sharing the gospel as we understand it now, all questions that are asked we're able to reply to them without if, and, but, or maybe. The gospel is the truth. It is applicable 100%.
Well, the thing that when I heard you say that you have questions, the questions are pertaining to our understanding.
Yes.
We have no questions about the way that God relates to the human race. The gospel is as set as the proverbial and the scriptural rock of ages.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there's no questions, folks, about that. How we relate to it and how we understand it, we got lots of questions. So we're going to be talking about that tonight.
That's ongoing.
Yeah, that's the ongoing question, is what our position is, not vis-a-vis God or vis-a-vis the way that he perceives us and all of humanity, but the way that we can best express it, the way that we can best understand it. It is not a question of the way that God understands us or how God is relating to us. It is how we relate to ourselves, frankly, because that God that is evidenced throughout all creation, as well as the scriptures, is very, very evidenced and very consistent, if you will. So we're going to be talking about that throughout the evening. The phones are blowing up, we're happy to report, on night number three, the webcast number three, I should say, more accurately, of the Start to Fall Pledge Drive. We're going to be talking about all of that and what that's about as we continue. This is Glenn Klein Online. Glad to have you along on the Gospel Revolution webcast. And we are so happy to report our first caller is coming from the great Hoosier State. Please welcome online our Indiana correspondent, our senior Indiana correspondent. We've been talking about him a lot and have heard from him frequently, but we are happy to report that he is home, safe, sound, and getting saved, I'm sure, as we speak. Please welcome online Mr. Grant Miller. Grant!
Hey, Glenn. I'm here.
Yay. Hey there.
What a welcome. Hey, Mike.
Yes, what a welcome is right. We are so glad to have you back.
Yeah, I'm glad to be out of the hospital and back where I can talk with you.
What?
But I guess I've been in contact with each of you a little bit along the way.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Ray, obviously, or Grant, there's obviously a lot of people that are logging on that have no idea what you've been through. We've talked about it quite a bit. But just for the beautiful humans around the planet, so that they're brought up to speed, Grant is an author. He's a gospel revolutionary, hosted Michael at his place in Indiana, and recently, just in August, participated in the first ever Gospel Revolution Summit in Houston, but recently you had a pretty dramatic and significant event occur in your life. Please share.
Well, I don't want to go into a lot of detail and bore anyone, but just tooling through our local town here on my motorcycle, and a car comes out from the side, just takes off, T-bones right into the side of my motorcycle, and throws me over two lanes of traffic, and I land in the grass in front of a gas station. My head struck the curb, and So anyway, you know, fast forward, that's been a month ago, and they were hoping to save my right foot, because when that car pinched my leg between the bumper and the motorcycle, it crushed the bone and pretty much just simply filleted the meat right off that area. And they thought they could maybe save it, but they were missing too much bone, and there just was no way. So the doctors kind of wanted to try, I could tell, but there was about three options, and to me, they were all just iffy at best. They were going to take 3 to 5 years for recovery, and even then, I might end up right where I am now. This option was to take it off, and in about 6 months or so, probably be just back walking around and bouncing like I was accustomed to. So I said, hey, I'm ready. Do it. I've made my decision. Why don't you doctors catch up with me and take it off and get me going? So once, you know, once they had the consent of their mind that they had tried what they could, because, you know, they didn't want to eliminate possible options too quickly, and then I'd be sorry later. But once they had eliminated those options, why, that's what we did. And I guess kind of the way I see it, I went into the hospital with some bad parts on me, and they took all the bad parts off. So I guess all that's left is just good stuff ready to go.
How I know you just got back after all this to home from the hospital. How are you feeling physically?
I've always got a little bit of pain that comes and goes in this right leg, the amputated one, but they took it off about 6 inches below my knee, so I've got a nice amount of leg to fit a prosthetic onto it, and I feel good otherwise. This right leg just ached some, and I've got some phantom pains in that amputated area. And it's funny because I do have toes in my brain. I feel like I've got toes inside that amputated area, and sometimes those toes are down there where they were. But almost all my pain pertains to those toes being bent or cramped or hurt in some way. So it's kind of funny, kind of interesting.
Well, you had some problems in that area prior to the accident, did you not?
Prior to the accident, no.
Your ankle and stuff.
Yeah, I had fallen and twisted my ankle, and it had never healed properly, and it would give me trouble sometimes. And so that kind of went away. Now I don't deal with that anymore.
Well, here's the thing, is that, and I've been guilty of this for a long time, is dovetailing pretty much every issue into a gospel issue. But what Grant is telling us, Michael, is about the power of the brain. And it is very instructive, I think, and if I can take my liberty here, to talk about that the only thing left, as far as the power of God is concerned, and God's influence on the earth, if you will, is to affect our brain.
Yeah, that's very, very, very true. And I, you know, I've been in contact with Grant throughout this. And I tell you, when you observe the reality of the gospel in another human being's life, and hear the trauma, my goodness, of losing a limb. I mean, this is a major thing. We're not talking about recovering from a flu here, but at no time have I heard Grant do anything before, during, and after do anything other than have the ability to completely embrace this situation as it is, if he went through any grief at all, it had to be extremely accelerated or never was there. We'll let him speak about that. But I'm telling you that I have been in awe at watching someone go through this and go through it in this type of mindset. We're telling this story, but you got to realize, folks, the story is normal. The way you're hearing it and the way it has been addressed, the way that it has been dealt with mentally and emotionally, that is not normal according to the way that we ever learned anything in my life. I know that for sure. And but this is normal, though, for gospel. This is I'm just amazed at the gospel, and I'm really, really thrilled. Grant will tell you this. When he and I would talk on the phone, I'd almost have to apologize to him, because at the end of our conversation, I couldn't think of anything to say as, well, I'm just really excited for you. And I thought, my gosh, that sounds calloused or something. But I honestly, that's the only thing that I could, that was coming from my heart, was that I just really was very excited for him. He wasn't offended by it. And in fact, he said, you know, you're kind of right there where I'm at with my thinking on it. So
I'm so excited about what you just said, Mike. I can hardly lay here and be quiet. Because to be able to handle this and to take the approach I am, I don't feel like I'm anybody special, but the gospel is something very special.
Yes, it
and
is.
I really think that the gospel plays a huge role. It's like an undergirding that stabilizes my mind, keeps my peace. It's something I can fall back on with joy and with a view to, and somehow, it just makes everything, I can take it. It helps me understand that things work out. It opens up a whole new world to me. This accident has opened up, it's like a gateway or a portal that I've like passed through in a way that, helps me, this will help me understand people. Somehow the gospel teaches me to just be patient and to rest, and that there's good things to come out of this.
You know, guys, I have to ask this question because it's come to my mind listening to you, Grant, and having spoken to you on the telephone and being very intimate with Michael's life and knowing what he has gone through on a number of occasions, just incredibly critical. And potentially critical situations, but actual real trauma, and obviously, Grant, you are and have experienced that recently. What level do you guys feel a responsibility and kind of, in a way, defending this gospel that we believe in and that we trust in so dramatically and so profoundly, knowing that Grant, as an author and as a contributor, as a correspondent to the Gospel Revolution, do you guys feel a responsibility to take on a certain attitude or a certain mindset because of that? Or is this just, are you, or do you feel free if you were disappointed or if you were depressed or if you were emotionally negatively affected in these situations and did not come out right now on the positive side of it, what is your feelings about that? I really feel I need to ask that.
I don't feel like I would feel a responsibility. It just seems like because that would be kind of back to I gotta, oughta, shoulda, should do something. It just seems like out of my belly flows these living waters. It just comes out from inside of me, because that's the life that I believe we have, and everybody has it, but it's like if you don't believe it, it's not available to you, and I so believe that we have his very life, in that we were condemned with him, and he took our sin. We have his very life. The more I believe that, that's what comes out, I guess, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And if that's what I believe is in me, then that's what flows out. And, you know, if things hadn't turned out this good, would I be more negative? Well, I don't think, you know, from a human,
but,
you,
but Grant, you understand what I mean. Michael, when we were in the Word of Faith movement, at least for me, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, I could not admit having a frickin' cold.
Yeah, I
no,
hear you.
Exactly
right. And I felt a responsibility to the message that I thought I needed to share. And frankly, I don't want to do that anymore. And
do
you hear my heart? Do you hear what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
I remember back
I'm
in those days.
Too, you're saying.
Say
you're
that again.
Saying we are free. You're saying we are free to complain and cry.
Absolutely.
Right, but we're so invested in the gospel because we believe it so much. We believe that it is the power of God. We believe it is the only answer for the emotional, intellectual, and willful experience for human beings. Regardless if we know them or not, do we feel an obligation to put the best face forward, Michael, in the middle, even or especially in the midst of tragedy and trauma?
Yeah, I concur with Grant completely. Absolutely, no. It is. It's really funny because that doesn't even cross my mind to try to maintain a certain disposition to prove that what I believe is correct. I remember back in the Word of Faith days, I remember, of course, I had a cold. I couldn't say I had a cold. And but my throat was really bothering me, so I bought some throat lozenges just to be able to soothe my throat a little bit. And, of course, I was blowing my nose all the time. And the guy that was in the ministry team in Norville Hayes Ministry, who was kind of over me, he walked up to me and told me, he said, "Your throat lozenges and your Kleenex are offensive to me." He says, "I'm getting tired of seeing this lack of faith."
Wow.
Yeah. And so I think that was one of the points where that I began, even way back then, to begin to examine this a little bit more than what I was willing to before that. But the need for the heart is to be real. Let me tell you, if I'm hurting, I'm going to tell you I'm hurting.
Yeah.
If it's hard, I'm going to tell you this is difficult, and I'm not going to feel the slightest bit that I am letting God, Jesus, the Holy Ghost, or the brethren and the sistern. I don't feel like I'm letting anybody down. I don't feel that if I am hurting mentally, emotionally, or in any other way, and especially since that's where we're seeing the gospel focused on, if I really am hurting, I get to say I'm hurting.
Right, and actually that is and was the topic of the e-newsletter that went out today that you guys may have seen by now. And if you haven't, please check it out on your inbox. And if you're not getting the e-newsletter, go to gospelrevolution.com and sign up for it at the top on the right side of the homepage. I got to ask you, Grant, I just have to because... Well, I just have to. When you were cognizant of what happened to you, did it ever cross your mind, or did you have to reject this thought that you had done or not done something that allowed this situation to happen on a negative side, or did you feel kind of special that actually it could have been much worse?
I never crossed my mind one tiny piece that something I had done or failed to do brought this into my life. That was absolutely not. It's just a, simply a matter of timing with vehicles and traffic. That's all. What was the last part of your question you just said?
I don't know. I think.
Did he feel special?
Did he feel specially protected? Were you tempted to call it a miracle from God or that, you know?
No. The only thing about special, the only thing about that is that in a way, even though it's been so hard and the pain, I do feel like I understand some things about other people that have gone through this. I can learn and I can almost begin to appreciate the experience, but no part of it is a miracle or like a favor or God chose me for this. Absolutely not.
It's hogwash. I cut you off. It is hogwash, folks. We completely concur with Grant's assessment. It is hogwash. I have to tell everybody out there that you, my friend, were not wearing a helmet. So obviously, and we won't ask you why, but we've got to say that on so many levels, this could have been much worse.
Yeah.
And obviously, it could have been much better. But regardless of what happens in one's life, guys, is that life happens. And
yep.
But the gospel, if it is embraced and in meditation, in other words, in muttering and discussing and having it be, as the scripture says, as frontlets between our eyes. That's where the Hasidic Jews, the religious Jewish people, literally stick the phylactery, the scriptures, literally on their forehead. If you're ever wondering what those guys in the black coats and the black hats are doing with that box on their forehead, they literally stick the scriptures right between their eyes on their forehead. That is a foreshadowing of having the gospel meditated and be a constant presence in our thinking. And, Grant, I think you and Michael and I got to say myself and probably thousands of people that are listening to the webcast that we'll never hear from can relate to that reality.
Mm-hmm. Can never relate
to... Yeah, that's very true.
The reality of what?
No, I said they can relate to the reality of going through life's circumstances with a whole different approach, with a whole different mindset, with a whole different emotional response.
Yeah. People, like so many people have told me, you're in my prayers. I've been praying for you and so forth. And I'd like to know what they're praying for. If they're praying for things for my full recovery, as some of them said, well, what's a full recovery? Am I going to grow back? Why not? We're dealing with God here. Mm-hmm. And if you're praying for the best for me, why are you praying for God to kick in now? Why didn't he throw in that day? Why didn't he keep it from happening? Does he just kind of meter this stuff out to a certain level of pain to people to teach them something? Just, here, I'm going to really throw this guy for a curve and cause pain in his life. I don't understand that. I'm not really sure what people are meaning. Or do they just mean they think about me during prayer? I don't know. I don't follow. I'm a little lost.
And thank God you don't. Because you would be, you really would be lost if you understood what they were saying.
Yeah.
Well, we once were lost, but now we're found. We're found in the safety of the grace and the peace of God.
These statements are courtesies. There's nothing. I will guarantee you that at least 90%, if not higher, of the people who said they were praying for you weren't, didn't.
Uh-huh.
Number one, that's the first thing, is that they actually don't, because they know it don't work somewhere. These things, the gospel, according to Christianity, has become courtesies, statements of courtesy at its best. That's its best.
That's its best.
The other times
exactly
it's condemning.
Right.
The rest of the time it's condemning, judgmental, and harsh.
And guilt, and
best,
guilt, and guilt-ridden.
Yes, and at its best, they have these courtesies that say, well, we're praying for you. That's all it is. That's all it is, because it's like Grant said, you know, well, what's that prayer going to do? You know, that's the amazing thing about the gospel, is that it actually gives you the liberty to stop and ask these questions instead of just, you know, saying these things and accepting these courtesies as something powerful. Let me tell you something, folks. The gospel is not a courtesy. It is the power of God to the saving of the soul. None of those people who offered you their prayers, I am sure they are wonderful, sweet people. I used to offer my prayers to everybody, too. But the fact of it is, there is more to the gospel than courtesy statements of prayer, and it is just so shallow. While you're laying there experiencing the power of God, they're dealing with Christian courtesies.
That's really interesting. I never thought about the fact that that's just a courtesy. It's so shallow in comparison to actually learning the truth of the gospel that saves our soul.
Well, Grant,
amen, brother.
I cannot tell you how it thrills my soul to hear you. I'm going to talk to Michael when we come back from the break about why we do what we do specifically. But I got to tell you, you're the reason we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God. Thank you. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, thanks, Grant.
You know, you know that our love is always with you.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, and I've just learned tons of stuff from you guys. So
hey, Grant, I got to ask you, how do you feel emotionally in the last half an hour sharing and talking about and hearing the gospel?
In the last half hour, this just like lifts me up. Lifts my mind. It excites me. That's what it does.
I know, brother. I was exhausted when I started this thing. I feel like I could run a marathon right now.
And when Mike was talking, I couldn't hardly wait to jump in, just because what he was saying was so good.
Kind of like the summit all over again.
Yeah.
All right, my brother from another mother.
Love you.
Oh my God, do we love you?
Yep.
Thanks, Grant.
Love you guys.
All right.
Yep.
Good night.
Bye.
There's Grant Miller. You got to be kidding me.
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus is right.
Jesus.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to, oh my God, we're just getting started. We have not talked for not at all about the third webcast of the Start of Fall Pledge Drive. We will be talking about why we're doing it. This is why we're doing it. Just so that you know that I know that you know that I know that you know. And when we return, we are going to hear from our latest Northwest correspondent of the Gospel Revolution. We're going to be talking about why we do what we do when we return right here. Oh, by the way, let me say this, that with Grant going away, that line is open to you now at 800-436-3260. Get on the phone. Let us hear from you tonight, 800-436-3260, as we continue on the third webcast of the Start of Fall Pledge Drive on the Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
The incredible responsibility that we have as believers to speak up when the Scriptures, the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets is spoken of as though they were nothing. I speak concerning the judgments that are spoken of by Peter in his writings, and I condemn them. Isaiah didn't say this is a rule, you got to do this. He said this is your heritage, that we should condemn every tongue that rises in judgment. And you should let no one stand and speak as though it is nothing.
That was Mike Williams in a new teaching series entitled A Scriptural Peace, recorded at the 2010 Southeast Conference, and is now available on the GospelRevolution.com website. This 5-CD series, The Scriptural Peace, can be yours for $40 plus shipping and handling. You can also take advantage of a special offer to download an audiobook version to your iPod or computer for just $20. For that download link, please email a request to freedom@GospelRevolution.com. That's freedom@GospelRevolution.com. A Scriptural Peace. Get your copy today.
You have a heritage.
Michael, we have a heritage.
Jesus.
Grant Miller has a heritage. Michael, why do we do what we do? What is our purpose behind the Gospel Revolution, the radio show, the CDs, all of Jeff Robertson's efforts, you traveling around, the Gospel Revolution summits, the videos, the DVDs? Why do we do all this?
I'm not going to apologize for the elation that I am experiencing at this moment. The clarity of comparing this experience that Grant went through with the gospel and showing proof of the power of God. You just heard the power of God. Do you understand? You just heard the results of the power of God, not this stupid, I'm going to be praying for you and we're lifting you up. And what the hell does that mean? This has been just so amazing. We do this for this reason, as you said very well, Glenn, and this is the reason we do it. Because people's hearts, people's minds are at stake. The mind is such an incredible thing. When you understand the things that the body cannot live without and function properly, you know you have to have those things. You have to have water. You have to have protein in your diet. You have to have carbohydrates. Some basic things that aren't options. They are not options for the body to function properly and not become anemic and incapable of doing anything. It must have these things. We have to understand the mind of the new creation. You've got to understand there's a new creation that appeared on planet Earth. People say they don't believe in creation. I believe in creation plus recreation, new creation. And that new creation has been given a new heart. A heart of stone was taken out, and a heart of flesh was placed in, and the mind of Christ was given to all of us. The mind of Christ is that attitude which says, I do not have to, even though I now have equality with God, I do not have to think that I have to do something to grasp for equality with God. That's explained in detail in Philippians chapter 2. The explicit understanding that this new creation came with a new mind, and that new mind has some information that causes it to function properly. Function and the way that it can doesn't mean it's going to take away all of the things about you that's you that are whatever they might be, but it does begin to cause those things to be seen differently as you experience them. You begin to see yourself differently.
Exactly.
You begin to see others differently. And even in the middle of a traumatic thing, emotionally, physically, mentally, You can allow the gospel to come in and drastically begin to affect the mind. Oh my God. There is no greater need on this earth. The greatest need on this earth, I'm talking about globally. Now you can feed the hungry. That's great because there's hungry people around the planet in certain places. You can fight malaria. That's great. Bill and Melinda Gates are putting billions of dollars into fighting malaria around the world. But that's only in certain spots because malaria is not everywhere. You can do certain things, very philanthropic. You can do certain things to help in certain areas. You can provide help drill wells in certain places where just a simple well, providing certain medicines that will prevent death in children and people, just the very simple things that we take for granted every day. But this is what causes the mind to be able to deal with life and function in life and deal with it as a reality, whether it's a broken heart, a broken bone, whether it's broken finances, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. There is a stabilizing factor for the mind, and it is called the gospel. It is the power of God. We're not looking for the power of God. The power of God that was manifested to bring this about, the prophet said, Jesus said, a wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, but there will no sign be given except that of the prophet Jonas, which was that Jesus was 3 days in the belly of the earth and then rose again. That is the only sign. That is the only sign that has brought us to the power of God. There is no power of God in those in things anymore. The power of God is now all completely deposited in the gospel. It is not just deposited in the gospel. The gospel is the power of God to the saving of the soul, to the renewing of the mind, to the stabilizing force that can come inside of us. And God knows that I know that everybody that knows me knows this is the power of God for my life. I need it. I want it. It refreshes me every time, and that's why we do this.
Thank you for sharing. Every time. That's the only guarantee that we can give, that if you expose yourself, if you dare to expose yourself to the gospel, it will save your soul every time. In the midst of an amputation, in the midst of cancer, in the midst of every possible devastating situation, economic collapse, it will give you, you'll become spiritual. You'll have a, here's the great definition of spirituality that we learned from the president and the founder of the Gospel Revolution that he found and researched and taught on. It will give you a vital, logical, rational, mental disposition. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't need that? One of our great revolutionaries in Nacogdoches, Texas, Chris Harrington, another attendant of the Gospel Revolution Summit recently, just wrote in. He says, I don't have to get other people on the right track because everyone is already on the right track. The reason I here's Chris's reason. The reason I talk about the gospel is not to set others straight, but rather to glorify the curveball, speaking of baseball, that God threw at us by loving us in spite of our best efforts. Now we can rest, giving the shaming and guilt trips a rest. Yeah. God has answered all the questions by his being graceful toward us. That's Chris Harrington from Nacogdoches, Texas.
Yay, Chris.
And now let us go to our Northwest correspondent in Seattle, Washington, recently of also of Texas, but newly in Seattle, Washington. Please welcome online Mr. Ray Harris. Ray!
Hi, Glennie.
How are you today?
Hi, Michael.
Hey, Ray.
Huh?
Said hi.
Oh. Oh. Quick, I have to get this out. I've been itching to say this. Grant was able to make the decision he made immediately. And Mike, you were talking about this earlier today. Because his brain is free.
Yeah.
If he was stuck in the church, he would have said, well, I need to pray about what I need to do. I need to ask God, what do I need to do? Should I try to do that, or should I cut my leg? like, oh, I just don't know
right,
what to do. God,
right.
I need you to help me to make the right decision.
Right. In fact, I would doubt, Michael and Ray, that the doctors were praying about it. But they were hemming and hawing and suggesting. But Grant was more confident in his hospital bed and more assured than the doctors were about what they should do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the doctors were having a difficult time with him having the resolve that he had. That was their problem. They're used to everybody wanting to do everything to the extreme measures. Save my leg no matter what. Save my leg. Save my foot. Save my toes. I don't want to lose my leg. But he looked at it rationally and logically and said, this is the way to go. So, yeah, Ray, you're exactly right.
He's free to make a decision. He's free to think. When you're stuck at somebody else making the decisions for you and telling you how to live life, when it comes time for you to make a decision, you're not going to do it. You're going to sit there and you're going to backtrack and guess again and then second guess again and all this stuff. And you won't come up with a decision. Somebody else is going to have to make the decision for you because you're too stuck in what if and what if I don't make the right choice and what if and blah, 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 blah. And it's stupid. It's stupid, it's damaging, and it destroys the point of living your life. Living life is so that you can move on to the next point. Not to just stay stuck in the same spot that you've been forever.
Right.
You're not living when you stay stuck in the same spot that you've been in.
How did you say, Michael, that if you dig in your heels?
You're not walking if you dig in your heels.
If you're not walking... If you dig in your heels, speaking of that and moving forward, you made a major decision, Ray, recently to pursue your education out there in the Northwest. And how's it going for you out there in Seattle?
I'm really, 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 really excited. I'm actually telling someone else that they should take some classes too, because I know that they want to take classes. They've been mentioning wanting to take classes for a while now, and I'm encouraging them, if it's something you want to do, it's something you feel like you should do, do it. And I hope that they're listening to me, because I told them every chance I got to, I was going to product placement that in every time. So
we've heard from our dear brother Doug Bowman in Little Rock about how he pursued his education. Michael, one can never go wrong following their heart.
No, absolutely. You know, and I also heard Billy is now made a decision to pursue her education. That stuff like this thrills me. I have to tell you also, a part of Ray's story is that since he got out of high school, he has made this move to start continue his education, as he told me three different times, and obstacles would come up and it would cause him to quit. And they needed something else, one more thing. And he's just gone right through this, and he's met the requirements. He's done the paperwork, and because he was able to think his way through it. And, Ray has a brilliant mind, and he's going to do very well in school. And Ray's right. There's never too late to learn, never too late to go back to school. But it's really funny how so many people – it seems like in the Gospel Revolution. Gosh, I was telling, I was talking to Hazel yesterday, I believe it was, or day before, and I was telling her about considering going to the university here and taking some classes. I'm just so hungry to learn about so many things. And I started trying to tell her how much I wanted to be a student and sit in a classroom in a university. And I choked up so bad I couldn't talk. I mean, I had no clue there was such emotion behind this desire to pursue. pursue more education. And it's things that I want to know. It's just like we've talked about, you know, I'm all the time coming up with these things, like photosynthesis and learning just enough about it to see how it relates to the gospel. But there's just so much to learn. And I think if I were 20 year old again, I would become a professional student. So,
well, I can say without fear of contradiction, to quote Jimmy Swaggart again. I don't know why I love that Jimmy Swaggart. I don't like or love what he teaches, but there's something about that guy.
He needs some loving.
But he always says without fear of contradiction. I can honestly say, to be frank and honest with you, that I have zero desire to go back to college. There is, and in fact, I was just saying this the other day, there is nothing in me that would want to go back into the classroom. I did that, been there, done that, and this is good, folks. You know, we got Ray back in school, Michael getting all verklempt, which is Jewish for emotional, about the concept or the thought of actually going back in a formal educational sense. I have zero desire to that. I'm good to go. Hey, Ray, we love you. We got to go.
One more thing, just one quick thing. The why we do this. My mom asked, why do we do this? And I asked her, why would you tell somebody something that, why would you tell somebody something in the story and nothing has changed after such a huge event? So the reason we do this is to tell them that something has changed. That's
something
why.
Has changed.
Because they don't know.
Because they don't know yet. Exactly right. All right, Ray boy.
Okay.
We love you.
Go.
Love you, Ray.
Love you guys.
All right. There goes Ray Harris calling from Seattle, Washington now. And going to be back in school. You know, we're talking about the pride that we feel for Grant Miller. The same for Ray Harris. That guy is manned up. I mean, that takes a lot of cojones, no doubt.
He definitely has done that. And it's amazing to watch, experience. And it's not as though we're sitting back watching everybody. I mean, everybody is still going through their stuff, meeting their own self face to face in the mirror. And my goodness, it's a good family to be in.
It's the best family to be in. you're part of a family, folks. I don't care if you're listening in Indonesia or Saudi Arabia. You guys, you understand that your support of this effort has us in places like Indonesia and Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. and places like Russia and Vietnam and Australia and Indiana and Alberta. You guys, this is what we do. I'm going to tell you why I do this and why I do what I do vis-a-vis the gospel. Somewhere deep inside my youth and childhood, there's something in me that actually cares about people, that actually cares about making the difference. I take no gratitude beyond the fact that that was in me. I take no personal gratitude, no personal compliment of that fact. I care about Sean O'Halloran, and I care about the fact that this guy is working. Sean, as you beautiful humans might know, is an insurance agent now. And usually he brings, like, his casual clothes, Michael, to the studio. But he forgot tonight. And so he's in his business attire doing what he does, and I care about this guy. And I care about people that I will never meet, that I will never know their name, that I will never see their face. I don't understand that, but I've got to tell you guys what is up. Why we do what we do? Because we want to make a difference. And we know from personal experience, in retrospect, that the gospel is, as Michael so beautifully articulated earlier, the power of God. We'd like to share it with some more folks. And so once a quarter, we come to you, and we ask you for your financial help in order to do this. Our requests are so meager compared to most charities, to most ministries, if you will. We're asking for you guys to participate to whatever level you feel comfortable and making no promise at all that somehow God is going to bless you, that you're going to be financially enhanced by this effort. In fact, we can honestly and profoundly say it will cost you money in order to participate financially. When you write a check to the Gospel Revolution for $10 a month or $100 or $5 or $1, David Johnson, who has participated from Illinois on many occasions to the tune of $1 or $2, you will have one or less or two to less dollars in your bank account. That we know for sure. But we still ask you to do that. And once a quarter, we take three webcasts, we make an effort online, Jeff Robertson gets on the phone, and we ask you to participate. And here is the amount that our goal is set, because we understand the importance of setting goals for ourselves and for everybody else that's out there. We're looking to increase our monthly donations by $500. $500 a month. Why do we set it? Because we know what's realistic vis-a-vis where we're at right now, where the economy's at. We have a little bit of grasp. And maybe we set it a little bit too high, because as of the webcast on this particular Wednesday night, whether you're listening to it live or in 6 months from now on this September 28th, 2011, we're at $140. That means we need $360 yet to meet our goal. Now, somebody could do that. Somebody could write a check, $360 every month, and take care of that. But whatever you can do, we're asking you to do it tonight. And regardless of when you're listening to the show, $5, $10, $360 a month, whatever you can do, we're pleased and grateful to receive one-time donations, and we do, and we have, and we will read all the folks as is our want to affirm and to acknowledge those folks that have given, whether it be in a monthly pledge or in a one-time gift. But our goal, because, Michael, the lifeblood of this effort is the people that give every single month, whether it be $1, $5, $10, $100, $1,000 a month, it doesn't make a difference. We set our budget based on what we know is going to come in. We don't know it's going to come in at one time. But when people make a one-time pledge over a 12-month period, we can plan a little bit. And yeah. This is the thing that we're asking tonight.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, my goodness, here we are in a pledge drive, and this is the first we've brought up anything about the funds. And the fact of it is that the pledge drives before have been a point at where I kind of see it as a boat floating and a water line coming up and to carry something forward. And in the previous ones, we have come out of these situations each quarter, you know, with higher water line, and we're able to float forward and to go forward a little bit. We came upon the point, and then by the end of the quarter, you know, things began to settle in, and we've come up a little bit on our monthly givers, which we are very grateful for. This particular pledge drive, though, as of tonight, we are not going to come out of this pledge drive floating.
That is a bad confession, my friend.
It definitely is, and it's the truth.
Yeah, it is the truth.
I was talking with Hazel yesterday, and we've had to put on a delay of a couple of weeks to have our first of the month. So our first of the month income right now is going to go to paying taxes and some other bills for the last month. And so we're going to come out of the gate this time already spending next month's funds from the get-go to pay last month's bills. That's not a good place to be right now. So and I say that just to say, goodness gracious, if there's somebody out there that, my goodness, you can say, well, hey, you know, I've got $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 that I really could, but wasn't doing anything because really didn't know the need. And that's lays on my shoulders because, it's my job to let you know what those needs are. And we just get so caught up sharing the gospel that I forget, as I do out on the road. I can go out on the road knowing that it is up to me to give the people an opportunity to give, so I can pay for the funds, take the funds to pay for the trip that I'm actually on. And we get into questions and everything, and I get so caught up in what I'm doing, I actually forget it there.
And God, that pisses me off, dude.
I know.
When I'm listening to the CD, and I know, I mean, the whole CD's on there, the whole teaching and the sharing and the questions is on the CD. And I hear absolutely no reference to an offering, a giving, a contribution, no reference to the webcast, no reference to the website. I want to reach through my CD player and punch you in the face. But I cannot. All right, so here's...
One thing that I can tell you is that we can share with you, obviously this is the truth, that there is a financial concern that we have to address. I'm, you know, the president of the corporation. It's my job to make sure that these things function smoothly. Everybody's doing their job very well. Let me tell you, there's not anyone who's not doing their job thoroughly in the gospel revolution.
And when Michael says corporation, remember, folks, it's a non-for-profit corporation.
Yeah.
And we can say without a shadow of a doubt that is an accurate description of Mike Williams Ministries and the gospel revolution. It is a not-for-profit corporation. All right, so here's the deal. We're asking for gifts of whatever amount. Monthly pledges is what we're appealing to. We'll take, and thankfully and gratefully take, one-time gifts. And for gifts of $100 or more, whether it be in a total of $100 over 12 months in a monthly contribution, whether it be a new or increased monthly contribution, or a one-time gift of $100 or more, you're going to receive free and postage paid as our thank you. The 6-CD series, The Mystery of Unbelief. And all you got to do is go to gospelrevolution.com, click on Please Donate, and donate to that level, whatever you feel like you want to do. Or you can call the office and the number that's at the top in the left-hand screen of the homepage and to talk to Jeff. And as we learned last week, that apparently if you make a pledge, even before you send any money, you're going to receive your CDs. And the person that reported that news is online with us now, our correspondent that reported that from the heartland of Cincinnati, Ohio. Please welcome online the maestro of the gospel revolution, Mr. Greg Amberge. Gregory!
How's it going, guys?
Greg, we are getting saved. Sean, although he is in dress attire, he looks pretty happy tonight. He's a little pale. He needs to get into one of the tanning booths here at the Sun Bar, but we're doing good.
How are our beloved Baltimore Orioles doing tonight?
It's in a rain delay. We're losing the Orioles. See, the Rays are getting their arses kicked right now.
That's why I ask about the Orioles.
The Rays are losing to the New York Yankees 7-0. Here's the thing, folks. For those of us that love the baseball, especially here in Tampa, we are on the verge of the greatest comeback in baseball history. The Rays being down in September by 9 games for the playoffs. And if they won tonight, that would guarantee at least a play-in game. and we didn't do so good. The Yankees are winning 7-0. But if the Baltimore Orioles beat the Boston Red Sox tonight, that would mean that no matter what happens in Tampa, actually in St. Petersburg, where I was last night and why my voice sounds like it does right now, we would have a playoff game tomorrow in Tampa Bay. And it's not going so well right now, and I'm really glad to be talking about the gospel because as much as I hate to admit it, I am emotionally invested in this stupid game of baseball. Oh, by the way, Michael, another report from Chris Harrington, you are now actually in college. You're back in college because Chris Harrington, our professor of the Gospel Revolution, has sent you two science courses on DVD from Great Courses. Chris reports that they are already on their way to the home offices in Houston, Texas. So, all right, good. You're back in college. Mazel tov.
I'm in college, yay.
Congratulations. And Ray will be happy to hear that. Very happy. Gregory, you heard Grant Miller earlier. You heard Ray having moved to Seattle. What's going on in Cincinnati?
Well, just life, which is great because you know, it was so refreshing to hear what Grant said about his ordeal, and I loved that you went ahead and asked the question that I was going to ask tonight, because it sounded to me like a little bit of that you know, defending our
Our turf, defending our turf.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we think like this, so it helps us through problems. And it does sometimes, and sometimes maybe it doesn't. I mean, it helps us to rationally face our problems.
It helps 100% of the time when it's applied.
Yes.
But sometimes the maestro of the Gospel Revolution, sometimes the founder and president, the grand poopa of the Gospel Revolution, sometimes the host of the Gospel Revolution webcast, we don't apply it.
Exactly.
And we're going to talk about this in the last few minutes. Sometimes we need each other to help us see, because even though we realize that the gospel has placed us in a position as the observer of our own lives, sometimes we're so emotionally invested in our own situation, we can't see. And so the wise thing to do is reach out to somebody who's thinking rationally and logically with a vital mental disposition to see if they can see for us. And the three gentlemen that are on the radio speaking to you right now have all been in that position for each other. And I have to tell you, folks, we're here for you. You want to know why we do what we do? Because we're here for you to do that if and when you need it. And, Greg, that's why. Greg last week made, or 2 weeks ago now, in the first webcast, made a $200 contribution, apparently received his CDs prior to even sending the money. And, bro, you know why we do what we do.
Yeah, I have made it a habit of when I'm stressed or when I'm maybe a little down or something, just throw in a CD while I'm working and just be reminded of being free and being just free to live my life. It's so refreshing.
I did that again just yesterday. We were talking about the video clip that's online right now and how it impacted my life about a week and a half ago. I went back and listened again, and it's like, I've never heard this before. And I was the one that did the CD when I did it. I was the one that did the CD when I listened to it the first time and the second time.
Bro, are you choking to death? You know, it would be awesome. I mean, in a very awesome way, if Michael actually croaked online and we had it recorded, that'd be beautiful.
Well, isn't he the false Christ?
He is the false Christ, and Michael, did you croak?
I didn't croak, but I got a frog in my throat.
Well, Gregory and I will continue until you have recovered.
Go right ahead, gentlemen.
Because being the entertainers that we are, we know how to vamp. That's what we call it in the industry, Greg. We call it vamping.
Yes.
And you being on stage from time to time, and somebody's got a broken string or whatever, you got a sound issue, you got to vamp.
Yes, you do.
So vamp.
If you're listening tonight for the first time, and you wonder what this is all about, I'm starting to understand that the gospel, as it the power of God unto salvation to us, it saves us from the idea that we have to perform for God and we have to do His will. I see so many people, so many of my Facebook friends from my old church that are so concerned about finding God's will. And I've been there, believe me. I've struggled with that concept since I was a little kid. And just to know that God's will was fulfilled in Jesus, and that it allows us to live our lives freely. It's just such a freeing concept for your mind. That's what I've been concentrating on this week. I mean, we joke about on Facebook with my Facebook friends the decade of Greg, but I am sort of having this time in my life right now that is, I'm just doing a lot of the things that I want to do with my life that I wanted to do when I was 30, and a lot of that had to do with religion, that I wouldn't pursue things that were in my heart.
Right.
And I'm pursuing them now.
I do not joke about the decade of Greg. I am very serious about the decade of Greg. I have established the Facebook wall or the Facebook page, the decade of Greg. I am the founder of the Facebook decade of Greg. But, you know, but all kidding aside, guys, here we are encouraging. We mentioned, obviously, Ray's situation in Seattle and Doug Bowman's situation in Arkansas. Chris Harrington responds by sending Michael College Course DVDs. This is good, folks. Moving forward is a good thing.
Yay.
And Greg, if there's anything that exemplifies your life ever since I've known you, and it's been a while now, we've known each other and been friends for years.
Right.
You're moving ahead, and I think that I can say fear of contradiction, if there's anything that exemplifies your life, it's you're moving ahead.
Yes, exactly. And I'm 50 years old, and I feel like I'm 25 or 30. I mean, as far as my outlook for the future, as far as my optimism about just my life, my enthusiasm for life, I feel like I'm half my age.
Yeah. And, moving forward is a sign of life.
Exactly.
Well, I can also say that I also feel... Yeah, I'm like 32 right now. I'm gonna be 52, but I feel 32.
Well, yeah, but you're in love, so you got a little extra adrenaline going there,
bro. You know what they say: whatever gets you through the night is all right. It's all... Hey, thank you. We love you, and play a song for us. When's your next gig?
We're doing the Toby Keith concert tomorrow night in Cincinnati.
Very nice.
Awesome.
So, all right, the Rays have come back. We're only down 7-3 now in the eighth inning.
All right.
All right, so keep posting. Keep your fingers crossed. Pray.
Everybody pray.
Pray in the Holy Ghost. Thanks for calling, Greg.
All right, thanks.
Late.
Love you, Greg.
There he goes.
Yay.
You know, I tell you, just hearing that guy's voice because of the level of intimacy that he and I have shared vis-a-vis the gospel and our friendship, that saves my soul. Michael, there's something about acceptance. There's something about being embraced by people who understand they're being embraced by God that is beneficial to the soul.
It really is, and very thankfully so. You know, we it's a powerful thing to have the gospel, to be able to be in process in each of our lives, and yet at the points where that we need someone to take us by the hand and say, hey, you know, take look-see here for me. You know,
I'm
not sure I'm seeing this right.
Right, which dovetails perfectly into the topic of our e-newsletter. And I may never be able to go through a webcast again without addressing the topic of the e-newsletter because of Mike Kolb's criticism of us not doing it about a month ago. So today the email was, or the e-newsletter was entitled Lay It Down, and it had a picture of a huge lion laying down with the lamb.
Yeah.
And Michael, you talked about, this was a letter from you, and I would say about once a month you send out a personal greeting versus the generic greeting that goes out. That's always, of course, laden and filled with the gospel. But you talked about a situation that you experienced in the last week or so that, by any stretch of the imagination, would be called traumatic for any person going through it as an emotional situation. And you talked about that when you realize that the gospel has put us in a position of the observer, that even after that happens, sometimes we still cannot observe. We still cannot observe our own lives. And that's a point where you reach out to a Grant Miller or a Richard Mull or a Kate Benham or a Greg Ambergy, or in this case, as I have many times, reach out to Mike Williams when I've needed to be able to see because I couldn't see. You reached out to me, and there was some powerful understanding that came to your own heart about you vis-a-vis the contradictions that exist in yourself, and how that, after you came out of it, applied to our understanding of the scriptures and the way that God interacted with humanity. This is very powerful.
Well, it's almost like this collision, you know. I didn't lose a leg, but there was definitely a sense of loss for sure. And it felt like a collision. It felt like, you know, I'd been broadsided by a an Oldsmobile or whatever, you know. But the none of that is of the issue. But the temporary need for those that are around you was, for me, was very real at the time. But I learned so much, and when I heard Grant's perspective that he was grateful for it, I look back over it now, and I'm grateful for this because it was helpful to me in the long run. And the insight that I really began to the thing that began to settle in my heart and mind is I began to think more in gospel terms instead of my personal situation. Was the fact that, you know, we see the God through the first covenant, and we see him angry, wrathful, full of vengeance and jealousy. And then there's this automatic switch to absolute compassion and mercy and redemption. And the one thing that I noticed that was missing in God's relationship with Israel all the way through this time, and now, of course, his relationship to the entire human race, there was never indifference. Anger and jealousy and rage, yes. Indifference, boy, you could never have called it indifference, that's for sure. You could have called him mentally ill, and he would probably have had to take him that title.
Bro, wait. Let's call a spade a spade. The God that we love, the God that we respect, the God that we know loves us and accepts us. We're talking about God here, folks. We're talking about the creator of everything, somebody that we could never even come close to fully comprehending.
Yeah.
If he wasn't completely insane, manifested in the scriptures, what Christianity and religion calls the Old Testament, if he wasn't actually, he wanted us to think that he was. This was a mass murderer. This was a torturer. This was somebody that instructed his people, Israel, not just to kill the soldiers, which we're still doing today. Perfectly sane people would applaud other so-called sane people for saying we need to kill the soldiers of the enemy. That's not what God said. He said, kill the men, kill the women, kill the children, kill the livestock, and leave no crops intact. This was a scorched earth policy to the extreme. This is the God that we uphold. This is a rational, vital, logical, mental perspective on what you can read for yourself tonight.
Yeah.
This is the God that we're so here we are. If there's any doubt that God was not indifferent to these situations and indifferent to his people Israel, there can be no doubt. And yet there was an extreme solution as well. The same anger that we believe was born out of his love and his response to the unrequited love, starting with Adam and Eve, continuing on through the people of Israel, culminates, Michael, at this place that I've been to that you've referred, well, you refer to in your book. I've been editing your book. I'm very lucky that I get to edit your book. And you people will read Michael's book. But to the place of the skull in Golgotha at the cross. And everything is fulfilled there. God's perfect love that somehow he comes out of this rage, out of this anger, out of this jealousy, out of this unrequited love. If you've ever experienced unrequited love or experienced someone who felt that your love was unrequited, you know that rage. You know that craziness. And yet God said at the end of the day, Michael, peace, be still. It is finished.
You know, the reality is that God never showed indifference, but I think the thing that was so enraging to God wasn't necessarily man's direct response to him. It would have been their indifference. I mean, it shows the power of indifference, the power that it can have. And, you know, at least you got to say God himself, you know, hit a rough patch there for a while, you know. And, you know, when you're in that type
wait,
of...
Wait. A rough patch?
Yeah, he went through a rough patch there.
God Almighty is instructing Israel to commit mass genocide, and you're calling it a rough patch.
Well, I'm trying to give him a break here, you know.
He don't need your break, dude. He's more than capable and has by the way, folks, God, the creator of the universe, Yahweh, Jehovah, however you want to describe Adonai, he embraced and owned his own rough patch.
Yes,
he took complete responsibility for his rough patch and allowed himself in the form of Yeshua to pay the price for all the issues between humanity, his creation, and himself. And then he established a peace treaty. There was a cessation of hostilities. Oh, I could preach right now. I am beyond fatigued. I could just preach right now. He called for a cessation of hostilities for eternity. There is no more difference. There is no more separation between you and God. Don't you ever think through circumstances, through what your church teaches, through what your parents taught, through what your mind tells you, that there is any separation between you and the Almighty, because there is none. There is no more separation between you and God as you and your breath. He is closer than your breath. He is closer than a brother that would pay his price for you, that would take a bullet for you. I mean, it is so beyond our comprehension to be able to believe and understand how close the creator of all the galaxies, the creator of the science that Michael wants to study, is to you. It's all inside of you. I was talking to my son Joseph last night, actually early this morning, about the gospel. And we were having a wonderful time. We were getting saved out on my patio by the pool. And he said, Pop, he said, I don't understand. He said, you're telling me that every human, and here's a boy that's been raised in it from the time he was 10, 11 years old. You're telling me that every human being has the completion of God inside of them? And all they have to do is think about it in order to have it affect their brain, therefore affecting their attitudes and their behavior?
Yeah.
And their I said, yeah, that's it, Joe.
That's the right question.
That's it. All right.
You know, God resolved his issues with us and our issues with him. I tell you, when you, that is the power of God. When you have something so powerful that it not only resolves your issues with others, it resolves their issues with you. My God.
How about it resolving your issues with yourself?
And with yourself.
That's what you talked about in your email, Michael. That's why we pictured the lion laying down with the lamb, as Katrina's song says. The lion made love to the lamb.
Yes.
Oh, my God. You guys, you don't understand. Stay with the gospel. You'll come to peace with yourself. Listen, other than having peace with God, which we can understand and mentally assent to and have it affect our emotions, there is nothing more powerful than being at peace with yourself. Are you kidding me? The same person that is truthful to a fault and yet sometimes lies, or even is tempted with a lie, the same person that is honest and trustworthy and sometimes skirts the truth, is at peace with that issue. You know what happens? That negative side, or what we would call a negative side of our contradictions, has less sway over your soul. And all of a sudden, you can be honest with yourself about it. You're honest with yourself, you can be honest with other people. And it's our perspective that honesty is the best policy.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so as we conclude, and we were supposed to be off 10 minutes ago, but I got to preaching. Sorry, Sean. Sorry. I hear you. I see what you're stepping in. We have got to go to my most favorite part of the pledge drives, and that is the reiteration of all the beautiful humans that have and are participating in the pledge drive. And check it out, folks. Check out the names. Check out the variety of the locations of people that are participating in the Start of Fall pledge drive. We hope you will if you are not one of them. We're going to start out in our satellite home offices of Calgary, Alberta, and the Grace Conferences in Victo Brennan. Dale Van Sickle, newly of Clyde, North Carolina. Tom Tonsky from Canton, Ohio. Ray Muse from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia. George Howell, Geo, from Monongahela, Pennsylvania. Stephen Snyder from Birmingham, Alabama. Bob Hines from McDonough, Georgia. Richard and Pat Salonen from the great city of Waukesha, Wisconsin. Very excited about the Milwaukee Brewers going to the playoffs of Major League Baseball. Paul Viggers from New Milton, Hampshire, the United Kingdom. Mark Kennedy, also from the UK, from Romford, Essex. Steve Stredwick from Whitehall, Montana. I've been to Whitehall, Montana.
Me too.
We love him. Richard Mull The king of comedy, the king of the can, as he would say, from Garden Grove, California. Marks Mitchell from Kingsland, Arkansas. Kingsland, Alaska, we learned last week. Doug Bowman from Little Rock, Arkansas. Billy Thompson from Wachuca City, Arizona, apparently going back to school. Jerry Ryan from the beautiful city of Tampa, Florida. Alan Davis from Chipley, Florida. Craig Davis from Chipley, Florida. Barry Cooley from Dyersburg, Tennessee. Gene Davyduck from Lethbridge, Alberta. Betty Cochran from Atoka, Oklahoma. Kim Morse from Marion, Illinois. Annette Hogan from Union, New Jersey. Tim and Beth Knappenberger from Canton, Ohio. Gene Giglio from Opelika, Alabama. Cliff and Katie Griffin from Gainesville, Georgia. Alvin Cooper, our dear boy in Oak City, Florida. Jerry and Susan Berman from Longwood, Florida. What's up with Florida? We're doing good down here in the Sunshine State.
Yes, you are.
Deidre Simpson from Kelowna, British Columbia. Dwayne Daku from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Tom and Linda Wilby from Fredericton, New Brunswick. Pastor Ted Winsett from Decatur, Alabama. Wayne Jensen from Bingham Lake, Minnesota. Todd and Angela Gray from LaPorte City, Iowa. Pastor Pat Winsett from Decatur, Alabama. Bernhard Colby from Elizabeth, New Jersey. Vivian Seilstad from East Gulf Lake, Minnesota. Georgie Najar from Strongville, Ohio. Lorraine Zerb from Edmonton, Alberta. Frank and Jan Alardo from Mobile, Alabama. We've had two anonymous gifts, one from Edmonton, Alberta, and one from right down here in Sarasota, Florida. Glenn Buchholz from Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. Gregory Ambergy from Mainville, Ohio. Larry Bayerl from Marshfield, Wisconsin. Jeff and Carolyn Cotton from Lawrenceville, Georgia. Bud and Ruth Ramsey from Park River, North Dakota. Helen Gannett, from St. Alberta, Alberta. Pep Washburn from Marshfield, Wisconsin. Chris and Glenda Harrington from Nacogdoches, Texas. And wrapping it up with Chris and Alexa Myers from North Augusta, Georgia. We still need your help, folks. I'm not going to go into the details that I did early in the webcast. Just go to gospelrevolution.com. Click on Please Donate, Do Your Best in a monthly, new or increased gift or a one-time gift, or please call the office at the top left-hand corner of the homepage and talk to Jeff. You get six CDs from Mike's series, The Mystery. It's the mystery of unbelief.
Yeah.
And it, you know what? That is an incredibly liberating concept, Michael. That God found us all and wanted to find us all in unbelief.
Yeah. So he could reconcile himself to us and us to him. He declared us all to be in unbelief. I'm in love. That's all there is to it. I'm in love.
Me too.
But thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Yeshua.
Yes.
You guys realize that Jesus' name is actually Joshua in English, Yeshua. And that God picked that name. He inspired the angel Gabriel to tell Miriam, the Jewish 13-year-old virgin, that her son would be called Salvation. That's what Yeshua means in Hebrew. Salvation. What a perfect name for the meditation upon the sacrifice that he allowed himself out of his own volition, out of God's will. You want to know what God's will is? The Bible said that God's will is Jesus Christ.
Yes, it is.
That is very, very good news. God's will is not who you marry, what job you have, where you go to college. If you do go to college, what church you go to, God's will is Yeshua HaMashiach. It's completed. He told us, Michael, it is finished. It's finished.
That's it.
All right, that's it.
We could either go on for five more hours or quit now.
We could go on for 27 more hours and more. And maybe when I can talk Sean into it and bribe him, we will do a Gospel Revolution marathon. Uh-huh. You know what, Sean, you're up for that, right? We can do it in between the time the Sun Bar opens and the Sun Bar closes, or Sun Bar closes and opens. You'll be down with that. If I bribe you, you could do it. Yeah, you could do it. All right, so that's it. We are finished. We will do this again 1 week's time. You guys, this is the only time of each quarter, once a quarter, that we ask you for your financial help. I know you've enjoyed it. We've enjoyed it. As Michael said, we are in love. We are in love with ourselves. We are in love with you. We are in love with God, all because of this power of God. We cannot deny it. We will not deny it. We will not be ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God unto the saving of your soul. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn. This is it's been an amazing night, and I appreciate everybody that called in. Thank you all. And we know that everybody's heart is just out there for everybody else, and regardless of whether what transition you're in or where you're going, what you're losing or gaining. And there's been people throughout the not just the gospel revolution, but around the planet, that have lost and gained a lot of things during this last during this last 30 days, and in positions where they're not sure whether they're going to lose or gain. But in Christ, it's all gain. It just doesn't make any difference anymore. It's all gain.
No doubt about it. Sean, what just happened in the Rays game?
Oh, my God, Michael! The Tampa Bay Rays just tied up the New York Yankees in what inning?
Oh, my God.
The ninth inning? Oh, my God!
Well, we prayed.
Just kidding, folks. Just kidding. We love you people. We want to thank Grant Miller for calling in and being part of this here webcast. Ray Harris from Cincinnati, or from Seattle, Washington, I should say. Ray from, or Grant from Indiana. And Greg Ambergy from Cincinnati. And the Rays, true to form, coming back miraculously. Well, I can't say miraculously. But I have to tell you, folks, that the Tampa,
comparatively speaking,
the Tampa Bay Rays used to be called the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And when they exorcised the devil from their name and became just the Tampa Bay Rays, their entire franchise was turned around. So exorcise the devil of self-righteousness and religion and Christianity from your life, and you never know what will happen. That's our suggestion to you. See, I tell you, man, I can turn anything into the gospel. Want to thank Sean O'Halloran, Jeff Robertson, for doing everything he's doing. Michael, we love you. We're so glad for you, and have a wonderful evening. I feel kind of saved myself right now.
Oh man, I do too. It really is. It's like an ecstasy. It is a constant feeding on absolute joy and peace, and I am so grateful for it. I'm grateful for everybody that's out there. Thank you, guys. I do love you lots. I think of you guys. Your names pass my heart and mind many times during the week, and we just appreciate you. It really is family.
No doubt. We are so thankful. We're thankful for everybody that listens, not just the folks that give, but everybody is contemplating, rehearsing, and enjoying the gospel. And we will enjoy it all week long, and we'll talk to you again in 1 week's time. And until that time, this is Glenn Klein saying, Carla, tea and honey, baby, the Rays tied it up. Shalom, everybody.